Healthcare, it's those basic fundamentals that set a human being up for success. If you're born into a family and living in poverty and moving, you're not going to get the education. You're not going to have the exposure to possibilities. If you're in working class poverty, you know, people believe all you have to do is work hard and you'll move up. But the Bureau of Labor's stats are clear. People, uneducated, unskilled labor, don't move up in this economy. So it's those structural causes of what are you paid. I mean, minimum wage plus minimum wage is poverty. So marriage is not the answer, because who are you going to marry? We have to begin to be honest about what does it take to earn a living wage, and what can you earn, what can you buy, and I think a lot of people get really confused about what people can earn and what they can buy. I mean, most people don't know that the average rent in the United States for a modest two-bedroom is $750 a month.
Yeah.
And you know, calculated minimum wage, they're not going to make it. When I was in D.C. in May, that we were having this big debate on the minimum wage being raised, the federal minimum wage being raised to $585, and I said, why are we even having this conversation? This is not a living wage. So we got two-thirds of the people in poverty are working, but they're not making it.
I'm talking with Dr. Donna Beagle, whose inspiring story you've just heard. Her work and her passion is to help people from all races who are trapped in poverty. And I want to thank you so much for taking this time to do this interview for Speak Up, Speak Out.
My privilege. Thank you.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Donna Beagle. You can learn more about Dr. Beagle's work by visiting her website, Communication Across Barriers. Visit combarriers.com. That's combarriers.com. Dr. Beagle was interviewed by Ginny Wolf of the program Speak Up, Speak Out at KSVR, Skagit Valley Community Radio in Mount Vernon, Washington. Production assistance came from Dave McConnell and Joseph McGuire. Speak Up, Speak Out is produced by members of People for a Peaceable Planet, a nonprofit organization in Skagit Valley committed to peace, justice, and nonviolence. You can visit them online at ppplanet.org. That's ppplanet.org. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Doug George from Pacifica Radio in New York. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM or freakradio.org, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, your Thursday evening slap at the chops of the Santa Cruz City Council and other reactionary groups posing as progressives around Santa Cruz. In studio guests, Ben and Becky will be here to give us the scene a bit to the south, and you can give us the scene out there on the streets. Call in and stay tuned.
Shopping cart sings on the cold morning pavement, searching for dreams and aluminum cans. I catch my reflection in the shuttered up windows and wonder how I ever got as old as I am. The street has no markers, just a river of concrete, mile after mile, year after year. And I reckon I remember, but I can't for the life of me understand how I ended up here. But the next time I'm young, I'll do it all different. I'll make the right moves and I'll make the right plans. I'll have me a family and a good job to go to, a house with a driveway where I park the sedan. And I'll never be poor, I'll never go hungry, I'll wear fancy clothes out on my promenade. And I'll sit at the table just as long as I want to. I'll shut my own door at the end of the day. Somewhere in a pocket of this greasy old backpack is a magazine picture of an old country town. Well, there isn't much concrete, but it's a good grass to walk on. Bushels of children running around. Folks look so friendly, all smiling and waving, covered in sunshine as they walk to the fair. As darkness crawls over me down in the alley, I wonder if someday I can maybe live there. But the next time I'm young, I'll do it all different. I'll make the right moves and I'll make the right plans. I'll have me a family and a good job to go to. A house with a driveway where I park a sedan. And I'll never be poor, I'll never go hungry. Wear fancy clothes out on my promenade. And I'll sit at the table just as long as I want to. I'll shut my own door at the end of the day. The street has no markers, just a river of concrete.
And that was Carol Denny from her CD, The Cruel Lullaby, name of the song, The Next Time I'm Young. If you want her stuff, you can go to her website, www.caroldenny.com. Denny is spelled D-E-N-N-E-Y. Well, I've got a pretty interesting show coming up today here on 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, for those who weren't here 4 minutes ago, and I said that before. You can always call in and try to preempt the show and have us talk about your issue. And if it's my issue, too, we'll talk about it and just ignore these guests. Who cares about guests?
Won't be the first time.
The number here is 427-3772. We have an alternate number, 469-3119. If you want to reach Free Radio itself because you have donations or interesting, or not, if you have questions, if you have donations, if you have any desire to be a part of the station, unless, of course, your name is Johnson, which guess we don't want you. You can call 427-4523. That was an in-house joke, which I'll explain sometime when I have more time. If you really want to be a member of Free Radio, you have to submit a tape, and the way to do that is make an application online. And you go to freakradio.org. Ben's looking interested here. Who knows? Maybe we'll get to some under a pseudonym who once used to be a broadcaster. I'm not sure she was a broadcaster, but she was an integral part of my show and hosted Free Radio for many years. Becky Johnson in the studio with me. In fact, let me introduce these two guests in the studio sharing the same mic. Ben Ramsey. Hello, Ben.
Hi.
And Becky Johnson, the notorious beggar-backer, as I call her, Becky Johnson.
Hi, Robert.
Becky writes for IndieBay.org and used to write for Street Spirit. She's been banned from a number of different publications.
I'm getting more infamous than you, Robert.
You got a ways to go there. Although, who knows, actually. Ben is...
I think you have like 35 more arrests than me.
That doesn't necessarily make you infamous. Ben here was last heard on Free Radio, I guess, when we were interviewing people about 9 months ago at the Homies for the Homeless protest in front of City Hall, when homeless people were challenging the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban under the Jones precedent. We had a precedent then from Los Angeles which said that you can't arrest people for sleeping because it's cruel and unusual punishment if the city generally has a shelter shortage. And Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, Richmond have all stopped arresting people for sleeping per se generally, but not Santa Cruz, because Santa Cruz, you see, is progressive and we know better. So organizations like HUF, which I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the Human Rights Organization, Housing Now in Santa Cruz, Humanity for the Homeless, have all kind of combined to press for the sleeping ban to be overturned by a federal lawsuit, which we actually have plaintiffs lined up for, and hopefully we'll give you some positive news about that in a couple weeks. But actually, the reason that I have these two guests in the studio is because they can give an update, particularly Ben. Becky's supplied some caustic questions for me to grill Ben with about what's going on in the county to the south, Monterey County. This is the county just south of Santa Cruz. The county seat there is Salinas, which I don't know if Ben is much of an expert on Salinas.
Not really. More Monterey, Pacific Grove, Seaside.
Right. And Salinas, of course, has a larger Latino population than Monterey, and certainly a larger Latino population than Carmel and Pacific Grove. But Pacific Grove and Carmel and Monterey are more, and Seaside, are more like Santa Cruz in that they're beach seaside towns. Mm. And they, to some extent, some of them are tourist communities. Monterey was the site of Fort Ord before it closed down, a large military base. We had hoped that was going to be turned into housing for homeless people. Tell me another one. You know, that one didn't work. And actually, that's never happened in spite of federal legislation mandating that as a priority. In the 80s, that legislation was passed, but it has not ever been effectuated, even though base after base is shut down. Well, let me look at my crib sheet here, Ben. And
okay, we can kind of chime in here.
Yeah, definitely. First of all, Monterey and Carmel and Seaside, these are towns, I understand, where Monterey is, what, 20 or 30,000 people?
No, I'd say 40.
Right. And Seaside's, like, getting pretty big,
pretty
right?
Pretty big, yeah. It's pretty close to Monterey, 36 to 40.
And I know Watsonville's getting huge.
Watsonville, yeah, it's growing. A lot of that population is suspect.
But. And, of course, yeah, of course. Well, you know, they could be illegal, and we want to have them arrested and deported if possible, particularly the women and children, you know. Nits make lice, as they say. You got to be, be careful about this. That's the thing.
Terrible.
Yeah. I won't bring Pat Kittle into this at this time. In Santa Cruz County, we've done a lot of programs. I've done a lot of interviews with homeless people, and talked a lot about the Santa Cruz and even the Watsonville law. Not so much about the Watsonville law, but a lot about the county and the city laws, but very little about Monterey and Seaside. So why don't I just ask you for a broad overview of what it's like. You've been homeless in Monterey County.
Yes. Last year when I came over here and participated in the sleep-in at City Hall here in Santa Cruz, I was on a quest to join an organization over in Marina, actually. But there was some strict criteria for that that admission to that particular organization. So I spent about a month and a half in between Carmel, Pacific Grove, Monterey, and Seaside. Homeless, yes.
You were living in a vehicle?
Occasionally, yes, I was. And taking a stealth approach in and out of beaches, different beaches, different wooded areas. You know, you get really creative.
Fort Ord. Is this because you're a hopeless alcoholic who has a dual diagnosis, who refuses to work, and is a wild and crazy hippie who chooses homelessness as a lifestyle?
No, actually, I'm an Air Force veteran, a war veteran, Grenada, Panama, Lebanon. And what happened is, in a course of different transitions in life, divorces, pursuit of music, mainly the divorce by the judge saw it fit to give most of my material assets to my wife or my ex, and I just kind of took off playing blues and hanging out, and it was kind of cool for a while. And then financially, I lost a job, and one thing led to another. And I was down in Modesto, and I heard about the Veterans Transition Center in Marina, which retrained veterans that met certain criteria, and I came over here last summer to pursue that.
And what happened with that? How'd that go?
Okay, like I said before, the Veterans Transition Center is located in Marina on the old Fort Ord. And what happens is a federally funded program that some of the criteria, of course, one, you have to be an Arnold B. discharged vet. And you have to meet certain criteria. You can't have any trouble with the law. You can't have warrants, state or federal. And you can't have anything pending that would prohibit you from getting federal funding. They call it grant per diem. It's funding from the Department of Defense.
So you can't be a medical marijuana user, for example.
You have to be clean and sober 90 days upon entering the program. And you have to test clean randomly while you're currently in the program.
You need a certificate from the Homeland Security Department?
I don't know about that, but it's pretty stringent rules on being clean and sober and pursuing higher education or either employment.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty good program.
And so you've been in the program?
I'm currently in the program now, yeah.
And have you been trained how to write checks and clean up your room and all those kind of important skills?
Actually, we had a financial advisor to come in and give a kind of seminar last week We get various forms of training over there, and some of it is financial, you know, how to invest money, how to save money, what about interest rates.
Hey, you know, I hear housing is a great investment these days. Have you considered investing your money in a large...
Well, actually, upon completing the program, if you're classified with any disability that is service-connected, you qualify for what they call a CalVest loan. Uh-huh. So we do get counseling on
so they'll loan you the money, and then they'll foreclose on you in a couple months just kind of to help things along, that sort of thing.
We're going to stay away from the adjustable rate mortgages. Yeah, we're going to do that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So do you own your own home, and are you now what do you call it, productively employed because of this fine program? Is that...
Yeah, I'm currently working toward all that right now. It's a two-year program. It's slotted for 2 years. You can live up, you can live on base there on post for 2 years. You have to meet certain criteria. You have to either be enrolled in school, which I am, and you have to be pursuing gainful employment or being retrained or pursuing a service-connected claim due to combat injuries. So.
And so where do you sleep at night?
Oh, I have two roommates. We have a three-bedroom house on the fort, old Fort Ord. Now is under the jurisdiction of the city of Marina. I have two other vet roommates, and we have normal schedules, normal life. We attend college. I'm in Monterey Peninsula College now, and my roommates are also going to Monterey Peninsula. One of them is going to Hartnell, and we're all pursuing associate degrees and you know, just various education things.
So, you know, obviously the answer to the homeless problem is to join the Air Force or the Marines, and, you know, find yourself a career, you know, and, you know, civilize a few of the natives abroad, and then get into one of these retraining programs, right? I mean, I don't know, what's the fuss about all this homeless stuff?
Well, no, that's just one aspect of it. Okay, what I want to talk to you about briefly is there's two divisions on Fort Ord. Okay, one side of it is the Veterans Transition Center. The other side of that building, which would be the old administrative building on Fort Ord, is an organization called MACOM. I'm not sure if this is an acronym or if this is the actual name of the organization, but what this organization does is it takes displaced or people that have fallen upon hard times, and you don't have to be a vet, but you have to meet certain clean and sober criteria. Mm-hmm. You can be dually diagnosed, really. And they serve, I'm not really sure about how many slots they have available, but they are open to the regular civilian population, and it's a co-ed program. But you have to have the clean and sober criteria met and working towards some type of retraining. And they have the east wing of our base that opened up towards civilian housing. So they got about... we got about 14 units. I think they got about the same. I think they got about 14 units, too, on the base. And they're currently taking applications. So I
know that when I met you, you and John Brandon, who came to the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting last August, and are actually you're the criminal element that is responsible for us having this homies for the homeless thing anyway. You homeless people actually took over our peaceful chatty chat meeting and tried to turn it into some kind of activist melee. And as a consequence, we were forced to, I don't know, put a little table in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz and embarrass poor Mayor, then Vice Mayor Coonerty, and then go to City Hall and have a bunch of L.A. thugs lead us in, you know, silly Know Your Rights workshops and hang out for 6 days and six nights at Santa Cruz City Hall. But luckily, you've realized the folly of your ways, and now you've returned to Fort Ord, and you've gotten with the program. You're not, you know, messing with the law anymore, right?
Well, no. The way I look at it is this. Okay, I've been on both sides of this issue, and I'm currently in the middle of transitioning from homeless to being self-sufficient. And in being on both sides of the issue, I kind of stumbled upon that whole protest here, Homies for the Homeless, here in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. I was kind of taken aback by the volume of homeless people and what I call stealth homeless here in Santa Cruz. When I first came to Santa Cruz here, I just kind of came through for just the recreational aspects of it, the boardwalk, what have you. And I used to frequent Rio Del Mar when I lived in Fremont when I was working as a truck driver and playing in a band. So I knew about the area. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize the volume and level of homeless that you had here. So when I became homeless myself and came to Santa Cruz, I was kind of taken aback by the sheer numbers. And how many of them were veterans? So I just kind of stumbled upon the protest, and I believed in the cause. I wasn't really familiar with the Jones decision, and I really didn't know that the city of Santa Cruz was actually enforcing this sleep law. So when I found that out, I instantly was interested in trying to repeal what I thought was a punitive aspect to people that had fallen on hard times.
And actually, now, were you ticketed at this protest, or did they pass you by?
No, actually, my partner, my road partner, John Brandon, bless his soul, was ticketed. Right before they got to me, I awakened to the Santa Cruz police, and I can't remember the sergeant's name, but I do remember the aggressive ticketing and the threats of tickets and arrest. And I had the wherewithal, I guess, to roll up my sleeping bag and just mosey on down to the Starbucks. And, you know, but John, my friend John was a little bit more vigilant, and he received the ticket.
Outspoken man. Actually, we had a number of interviews with John who died about a month after that, right?
Yes, he did. That's why I said John and I was. I really miss John. He ended up. He's one of the tragic homeless deaths. One of my friends. He's actually a Vietnam vet and served with my brother in Vietnam. So yeah. So John and I were really close. And he died in a van in Seaside. We were both sleeping in a van, awaiting admission to the Veteran Transition Center. And John passed away right next to me.
Yeah. Well, what's the story for homeless people in Monterey Seaside area? Are there a lot of folks outside? Do you have any estimates on the population?
Now, I want to classify my comments here, and I don't want to offend anybody here, but I can just give you my personal view of what I've experienced there, and this is just only one person's view. The city of Monterey, Carmel, Pacific Grove are really tourist-based economies, right? And that being said, there seems to be a blindness, if you will, toward the problem of homelessness. Now, there are some programs there. But first of all, I want to interject one thing. The city limits of Monterey is not really very big geographically, and neither is the city of Seaside as compared to Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County. So pretty much the word on the street is if you're going to sleep and you're going to be homeless in the city of Monterey, Seaside, Carmel's out of the question, Pacific Grove's out of the question. It's pretty much a zero tolerance for that. You have to camouflage yourself and out of sight, out of mind. There is kind of like a designated area of Monterey, and the only one I know. Now, there you can do your beach camouflage during the height of the tourist season. So, like the weather like it is right now, you know, the real hospitable weather, you can kind of blend in with the regular tourists and kind of hang out, and you might be allowed to get a few nights in on the beach. Del Monte Beach and off Del Monte and Monterey is one of the spots you might be able to pull that off with by Adventures by the Sea. But there is a designated program there. It's called the IHEP program, and I'm not really sure if there's an acronym, but it's pretty self-explanatory. But anyway, what this is a Christian-based program that comes around to a designated location. It's in front of the Naval Postgraduate School on Del Monte. There's an area there north of Del Monte Beach. And there's a 25-passenger bus that comes around at 4:30 every evening. It's first-come, first-served basis. It's a Christian-based program. And the first 25 people on board that bus, and usually three more might be stuffed in, will be taken to an undisclosed location, usually a church, and they'll serve a meal. And you're allowed to sleep at that church for the night. And the churches are rotated. Carmel is real hospitable that way. So is Pacific Grove that way. And that's I guess it's the way they feel they make their contribution toward the homeless. And it is a contribution. It is very much appreciated. I've actually slept in both of those locations in both the churches there. So,
How many people don't get to use the buses? How many people does it exclude, in essence?
Oh, my God. 25 is the maximum, and that's just a ripple in the pond of really how many people could actually use the service.
So where do most people go? Are there bridges? Is there a greenbelt area? Is there a slum district? Do they squat? What happens?
Now, some people would classify the whole city of Seaside as a slum, but we're going to get away from that. But what I'm going to say is that even that being the case, there's not very many bridges in the city of Seaside. It's really a hilly geographic city. It goes from Del Monte and Fremont up into the hills, and most of the hills are residential. So there's an area in Monterey called Del Monte Center. The streets that actually coincide would be Soledad and Munros. And in that general area, that's a really commercially zoned area. A lot of commerce there, a lot of businesses. But there's a wooded area that everybody calls Del Monte Forest. And it's kind of like a known thing that you can kind of disappear in a stealth manner into the forest, and it's kind of like a don't ask, don't tell policy. The Monterey police know about this area. It's a highly populated area of homeless. It's pretty much a designated area without being classified in homeless area.
Is there an anti-homeless sleeping ban like there is here in Santa Cruz, and do they enforce it?
Now, see, I was asked that question, and I'm not really sure that there is an anti-homeless ban. I think the Jones decision would probably be on the board there, too.
It should be on the board here. But, I mean, independent of the Jones decision, which, for those who don't know, is a decision which says in Los Angeles there was actually a settlement that said anywhere in Los Angeles, if you're sleeping at least 10 feet away from a building between the hours of 9 and in the evening and 6 in the morning, and they still haven't built 1,250 units of supportive housing or some such number, they can't arrest you under their can't sit, can't sleep, can't lie law. That doesn't mean they don't arrest you for littering. If you drop a cigarette or start running you for warrants illegally with illegal stops or anything, or pick you up under the state anti-homeless law, which is still in force, 647J, but under the particular code in L.A., they can't. So, and that decision covers actually nine states. And it was annulled in a certain sense, or weakened. It wasn't vacated. Yes, it was vacated, but it wasn't depublished, or it was depublished. Well, I'm never quite sure what the answer is there, but it's kind of a precedent, but not as strong a precedent as it used to be. It's a precedent in the sense that it's had impact politically and legally on the two of the largest cities in the state, Los Angeles and San Diego.
Right.
But in terms of Santa Cruz, it has had. The only impact it's had has been, you know, rhetoric that we make at city council, the lawsuit we're trying to draw up. And I think the mayor has been in one debate in the last year on the subject on community TV. So I guess what I'm saying is that independent of the Jones decision, what are the laws?
Yeah, I think I understand your question. I can't specifically speak to any local ordinances that they have there. But what I will tell you, though, mm-hmm. is that if you've ever been to Monterey and you've ever been to Carmel or Pacific Grove, the Commerce area and just the overall tourist format of the city is really yuppie-ish. And it's pretty much known around the city that you're not going to sleep within 10 or 20 feet of any building in the city limits of Monterey or the city limits of Pacific Grove or Carmel without being arrested and going to jail. That's mm-hmm. just the bottom line. Everybody knows that.
But have you seen people with tickets for sleeping in Del Monte Forest, for example?
No. Del Monte Forest occasionally gets raided, but usually they're looking for somebody specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the designated area. It's like that's the area that they've designated.
So you've never seen anybody with a ticket for sleeping in their vehicle somewhere?
I've seen people ticketed for sleeping in their vehicles in Monterey. There's a lake, Lake El Estero, which runs off of Del Monte. And it's just like a man-made lake with, like, paddle boats and ducks. And I mean, I actually know the lady that owns it. And to even sleep around that area in your vehicle, you'll be ticketed. Yeah.
And so, but is it a matter of it depends on the area you're in? Some areas are considered tolerated areas, others are not?
Because the only one area that is tolerated is the area of Del Monte Forest. Anything outside of that, you're going to be ticketed or either arrested. And a lot of the homeless people are under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Some of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And with that ticket, usually,
unlike the house population, completely sober.
With that ticket, right. usually comes some type of added police action because you know there goes the search and you know and the seizure. And, you
we
know,
don't want no drunken scum messing up our tourists, unless of course they're drunken scum spending money. You know,
yeah, it is
and
a tourist
staggering around
economy.
A Monterey right. wharf or some
right.
fisherman's wharf.
Right.
Del Monte Forest. We actually talked a lot in one show. I had a long interview with a hobo Lee about. The despoiling of the Greenbelt areas in Santa Cruz. People who are otherwise very progressive, radical even, some of them feel very very hostile towards not just homeless people camping, but anybody camping up in the forests generally because there's such a bad record of leaving trash, shit, toilet paper, structures, all kinds of debris that ruin the environment. Is that a problem in
Yes. I think that's an ongoing problem. I just think, well, the Del Monte Forest is so dense with greenery and acreage and foliage, is that problem could even probably be somewhat camouflaged too. But that's an ongoing problem wherever you have a real big homeless population. But they tend to tolerate that with the city workers because they tend to at least know that one location that the people are going to be in as opposed to right down the hill from that is a major shopping center and movie theaters and Macy's and some of your big end stores. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that here on the other end we have Ranger Wallace and his and then Sergeant Barry? That's not his name, but there's recently been a big increase in enforcement both with Parks and Rec and police officers in the last year in the Greenbelt areas in the Santa Cruz area. They've actually given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Parks and Rec to do that. And it certainly is true that in Santa Cruz, 60 to 80 tickets a month does not mean they're ticketing, you know, everyone or even every fifth person. But everybody here, as in Monterey and Seaside and Carmel, is in a certain amount of danger, it sounds like. Although if you have actually officially tolerated areas, perhaps less so there than here. I don't know. We're talking with Ben Ramsey, or actually I'm rambling on while he occasionally makes an answer. And listening silently is Becky Johnson, who's also been working on this issue for several decades. In about 2 or 3 minutes, we're hoping to get a call from Portland, Oregon. In Portland, and I encourage the two of you to stay in the studio and help grill the Portland activists or make comments and relate it to your own area. In Portland, there is an ongoing protest at Portland City Hall. They met with the mayor yesterday. Actually, the mayor will actually meet with protesters there, unlike here in Santa Cruz, where they ban protesters like Becky here from the bookshop Santa Cruz for carrying signs out front. That's part of, I guess, the civil liberties approach that attorney Ryan Coonerty and Mayor Ryan Coonerty, constitutional law scholar, as he so describes himself, Ryan Coonerty.
Yeah, forcing uses. Me to get my books at Amazon.com.
Oh, boy. Well, you go up to, I check out Logos, perhaps, although I've heard there are problems at Logos. Well, here's the story. City Hall protests will continue. I'm looking on Indy Bay, Portland Independent Media Center. The top story is City Hall protesters met with mayor. And it says, responding to an invitation issued by the office of Mayor Tom Potter on Monday, elected reps from the homeless camp outside City Hall met with the mayor at 3 p.m. Tuesday. Scheduling only half an hour for the meeting, the press conference was to begin at 3:30. Potter sauntered out around 3:50, flustered and red in the face, perhaps upset at the meeting that took 2 weeks of avid protest to get, had lasted more than half an hour. And there's a longer story on this issue. Arthur Rios, who's the guy who's perhaps going to be calling in, hopefully very shortly, I spoke to him earlier today, and four other representatives of the homeless camp at City Hall attended the meeting in hopes of discussing their reasons for protesting, stated in their letter previously written to Potter. However, when they arrived, they were handed a typed response from the mayor that had been written previous to their meeting. If there was a middle ground to be discussed or if there was going to be any constructive problem solving, it had apparently been done without actual dialogue with the homeless citizens. Mm-hmm. Rios reported the mayor did not address any of their concerns, the need for a green zone, the no camping ordinance, or a 4-week suspension of the sit-lie ordinance in order to give social services the time to plan more sustainable solutions for the population. Instead, the meeting restated the mayor's opening of 102 beds, 90 for men and 12 for women, and the issue, the protest violated public safety and sanitation standards, harping on a supposed heroin needle found in the public use bathroom in a nearby park and feces and urine on the sidewalk. Of the 90 beds for men, 84 have been filled in less than 2 days, and the women's 12 beds have been filled, and there is a waiting list for 45 women. Adding insult to injury, the City Hall grounds employees have not reported any substances or needles found, stating the worst thing they found was the smell of strong perfume. Let's see if we actually can put this person on. Hi there, I hope you're on free radio. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me? A little problem here. It looks like we have a problem one of these lines. I'm hoping that our caller will call back on a second line. That sounds like Arthur Rios continuing with his story and hoping that we'll hear from him again. The mayor would make no comment about the possibility of a street sweep to remove the protesters from their peaceful camp, nor would he speak to the citizens' right to protest. Potter, the mayor of Portland, Oregon, continued to reference his 10-year plan to fight homelessness and the fact that $37 million go toward programming to fight poverty. However, he said very little about the repeal or suspension of the camping ordinance, which he claims is a valuable tool. He's trying again on this line. Let me see if I'm going to pick it up in another way. Hi, can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Right, okay, they thank you very much. Okay, I'm getting secret instructions from a secret man here. Thank you very much there, Dennis. All right, thank you. So we'll hope that Portland calls back. It seems that somebody turned down the knobs, and they're going to get it. but I've turned up the appropriate blue knobs, and I'm ready to go. So please, right. Portland, call back if you can. Of course, we'll see if they do. That could be Portland calling back. Let's see. Hi, we hope you're on free radio.
Yeah, Robert North?
Yes, Arthur Rios?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Hey, Arthur.
Hey.
All right, Arthur, in the studio with me are two homeless activists and one formerly houseless man. I don't know, I guess you're homeless at the moment.
Technically, yeah, still.
Yeah, we got Ben Ramsey and Becky Johnson. I'm Robert Norris. Arthur, talked to you earlier. How you doing up there in Portland?
Good, doing very well here today in Portland.
All right, well, I've just been reading a Portland Indie Media story about your meeting yesterday with Mayor Potter, and how he essentially declined to respond to the issues of the sleeping ban, the sit-lie law. And I thought maybe I should just, you know, let you give a brief description of what's going on up there to begin with. Give us a sense of the size of the homeless Portland population.
Well, the homeless population here in Portland is up in about almost 10,000. Some numbers had come out to where they state that there's about 9,600 plus homeless that actually do sleep out on the streets. But as their numbers look and they state with all the shelters, that there's only 1,438 homeless people that sleep out on the streets.
So, Portland is a city of what? How many, 500,000, a million? How big is Portland?
Close to almost a million people. They call it the retirement state. They call it the state with, there is a lot of homeless. There's about a good 2, maybe 3% that are homeless, more than people know, because you have your alcohol and drug treatment centers that house a lot of the homeless, because if they were to leave from those treatment centers, they would also become homeless. So we have a lot of drug and alcohol treatment centers for youth, for adult, and also for elderly. And there's about a good 30 of them here in Portland. So if they were to go homeless, where are they going to go?
Now, Portland is a city that kind of located near two rivers, the Multnomah River and the Columbia, right?
Correct.
And it's also a city that has a lot of rain, so it's not the most congenial climate to be homeless in, right?
No, not really. Actually, today we have very good weather. We have almost up into the 90-degree weather, so it's really good that today is this way.
But, I mean, isn't most of the year, isn't it rainy up there?
Yeah, it's either raining or we'll get some pretty good hail and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But today, it's been the first day of really nice weather.
I mean, I was born in Portland, and I went to school there for a while. So, you know, I have a kind of a vague recollection. It was pretty wet, or in the summer, it was pretty hot. And not, you know, I mean, I like the foggy, cool places myself, you know. But
it gets really, really humid here when it gets hot, and when it gets cold, it's a really, really, really cold.
On the other hand, you have a number of organizations up there that have been fighting for the civil rights of homeless people, such as Sisters of the Road and Street Roots, and Street Roots, of course, is the newspaper. Sisters of the Road is actually a cafe that homeless people used to be able, maybe they still are, come in and just, you know, you can eat free for an exchange of, what, coupons or work or stuff like that?
No, actually, what it is they keep their support in, you know, letting the working groups that they work with, you know, trying to uplift these ordinances that we have, the sit-lie ordinance and the camping ordinance, because, you know, it's, you know, unconstitutional and cruel and unusual punishment for people not able to sleep on the streets in Portland.
Now, come on, are you using some kind of fancy Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals language on me from the Jones decision? Is that what you're talking here?
Well, not really. That's about what it's been like. When I got first started into getting real active into a lot of these issues with working for Sisters myself, when I came out to do this and protest out in front of City Hall, I did this for myself as being homeless for like 14 years myself, and bringing it forth that a lot of people out here that are on the streets cannot camp or sit or lie for anywhere of a period of time.
Now, wait a minute. Arthur, I heard, you know, that there was a famous Wicks decision in 2000 that threw out the city's sleeping ban. And what happened to that?
They still use it here to where, you know, that WIC ban, I have not read most into it since we started this, because now with these two ordinances, they really you find a lot of different things here around Portland. And some state that even if you try to, like, camp in your own backyard, you can be cited for, you know, camping in your own backyard. Or if you're sitting out on your front porch and you're watching your kids play with chalk on the sidewalk, that they could also be cited.
Well, but unlike in Santa Cruz, you can't be arrested, or can you be arrested for chalking on the sidewalk?
Well, we've had a few people chalk over here on the City Hall's property and stuff like that, but they didn't get any citations because we were still under a protest.
Right. Well, actually, we have a woman here in the studio who has been not only cited, but she's been arrested for chalking and then taken to court and convicted. That's Becky Johnson. Becky, meet Arthur. Arthur, meet Becky.
Hi, Arthur.
How are you, Becky?
Yeah, I was actually arrested for misdemeanor vandalism when I used sidewalk chalk on a sidewalk and gutter. And
what did you write there, Becky?
I had an expression that said, "Are we so cold-hearted that we would make it illegal for homeless people to sit down to ask for food after dark or to cover up with the blanket at night?"
Because, Arthur, here in Santa Cruz, we have very, very harsh laws, which Portland may be imitating. We got them originally from Seattle in the roulette decision, as they called it, back in 1994, which said that you can't be within 14 feet of a building in a seated position unless you're on a bench, and they've removed half the benches in Santa Cruz. And, of course, you also can't lie down on any sidewalk anywhere downtown. That's illegal. You can't sleep at any time in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night on any public property or in any vehicle. But that, enough of Santa Cruz. What's the law in Portland that you're fighting in front of City Hall?
Well, what it is the sit lie law, which means you can't be an obstruction on the sidewalk. That means if you're standing out or sitting down on the sidewalk, as most people that are homeless will panhandle. It depends on the business, on their stating, like, if you're too close to the door or you're too far into the sidewalk where pedestrians can't get around you with minimal access of, you know, being in a wheelchair, being in a walker, or walking, you know, as a normal human being would walk down the sidewalk. If you're there, you can get complaints by from the security, some of the Portland police that are here, and the other one is the camping ordinance.
Now, hold it. Now, how wide are your sidewalks?
Our sidewalk is about anywhere from, I'd say, about 5 to 7, depending on the sidewalk, is a 5 to 7 person side-by-side walking down.
So, I mean, in practice, I mean, I'm sure there were laws against blocking the sidewalk, you know, before this all started, and they found that you had to willfully block the sidewalk. They found someone would have to tell you move, and you wouldn't move, and that would be obstructing the sidewalk. We have a similar, I think it's a state code here, and I think it's a state code in Santa Cruz. But Santa Cruz passed other laws which said it's illegal to be on the sidewalk, whether you're obstructing it or not. And I'm suspecting that that is what we're really talking about in Portland, too. Am I wrong?
No, that sounds about right here, that, you know, you literally can't obstruct the sidewalk.
No, you're using the word obstruct. Don't do the police's job for them. You're not obstructing when you're being there unless you're blocking someone's path. They're talking about actually being on the sidewalk in a seated position, aren't you?
Right, in a seated position.
Even if you're not obstructing, you know.
But you got to also remember, we have, like, mailboxes. We have what is called A signs that are also out that block part of the sidewalk also.
Well, what I'm saying is, I take it you don't favor this law, right?
No, none of us really favor the sit lie law because, you know, if I want to go over in front of Rite Aid and I want to go panhandle and I feel a little tired and I just want to lay down and just put my hand on my face and just sit there and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to get medication or try to get off the street for the night to get a hotel or something, you know, I should be able to as long as I'm not obstructing anybody's pathway.
Well, see, that's why I think it's important that you make it clear you're not, you know, there's not, the sit lie law, at least in California, and at least Palo Alto, where Becky and I visited in 1997 opposing it, and I think at Santa Cruz, It has nothing to do with obstructing anything. It has to do with the presence, the visible presence of poor people in a business district. That's really what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, they're saying anywhere. You can't do it anywhere in downtown Portland. You can be in front of our Justice Center, where you go to jail at, all the way to the federal courthouse, the federal businesses down here, in front of McDonald's, Carl's Jr., all these different places.
Right, but the point is that they think it's bad for business and doesn't look good, right? It has
Correct.
Nothing to do with health and safety, because health and safety, you know, they tried to make these arguments in Palo Alto, California, that it was a trip and fall hazard was the phrase used. But they couldn't come up with anything that showed that there was anything, you know, real about that. It's similarly in Santa Cruz, they made it illegal to be in a parking lot at night, even though there's no indication that there's any bigger criminal problem in a parking lot than anywhere else in town. It's all, you know, it's all scare stuff similar to what goes on at the national government. Becky's got some thoughts here.
I suggested that they ban everybody over 70 from the downtown area because people over 70 are a whole lot more likely to trip and fall.
Oh, wow.
So you, how many people you got at City Hall there as we speak? Am I talking to you from City Hall, Arthur?
Yep. Right now I'm looking at about 2, 6, 12, 18, 20, 25, 30, 40. I'd say a total of about, I'd say 50 people right now, and we'll have more people coming as the night progresses on.
And how long were you there, and how long have you guys been there?
We have been here since April 25th at 10 p.m. We have been here ever since then until this morning on the front steps of City Hall out to their sidewalk.
And then
as of this morning, they came in and did a sweep on people.
How many police officers showed up this morning?
I have been talking to some of the other role models that have been out here and empowering them to keep numbers. And they said there was a total of about, like, maybe 20 officers to about maybe 40, maybe 50-plus people.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of reasons did they say that it was illegal to be to assemble peaceably to petition the government for a redress of grievances?
Well, because there had become some sanitary issues, some public health issues, some public issues on we happen to have some drug activity that happened over here. And the Portland police had come in and had did a undercover sale, and they used it against us and all this other stuff.
Well, wait a minute. Slow down here.
They called it a big campsite.
Hold it, Arthur. Now, wait a minute, Arthur. Arthur, if somebody is engaging in drug activity, then you arrest them for drug activity. If somebody is engaging in crapping on the sidewalk, though, I would wonder, you know, maybe the Portland doesn't have adequate public bathrooms. Might not that be, you know, an indication? But if people are intentionally doing this kind of stuff, then you ticket them, or you hold them responsible for those crimes, right?
Right. Correct. That's what came from the Portland police. They told us, if you have any problems, contact us, and we will take care of it. They did was a control by, and then use that information against us later.
Well, now, how can they use it against you unless you allow yourself to leave? I mean, it sounds like if they arrest you for claiming that there are drug sales or poo-poo and pee-pee, and you are simply there petitioning, you know, the mayor to essentially enforce the Constitution in Portland for poor as well as for middle class and wealthier people, then they are violating your rights. And if you have any attorneys behind you, and it sounds like you might, I got to ask you if you do, and I will in a moment.
Okay.
But, you know, that, you know, you have a basis for saying, okay, you want to arrest me? That's fine. Arrest me. Take me to jail. But I'm here with this petition for the mayor. And they also have this strange little document called the Constitution of the United States. Perhaps you've read it, you know. And you can read it to them aloud as they take you to jail. I mean, actually, Wobblies did that 110 years ago or 105 years ago in Portland and other cities up and down the coast, members of the Industrial Workers of the World, when they were being arrested for assembling. They were trying to do, you know, to guarantee the rights of people,
right.
To, you know, working people, particularly to get decent jobs.
Right.
But you know, what happened? Why did you decide? I guess was this a tactical decision? You decided to leave and come back, or what happened?
The tactical decision from our side was that a group of the homeless and a group of our supporters had chose 11 of us to speak for everybody with inside with our Mayor Potter, with the commissioners, with the camera crews, with all media. And what had happened was when we had to make some big decisions on what to do next, there was four of us. Four of us were the only four there at the time. We spoke, and we all felt that we won some victories with actually getting to talk to Mayor Potter, not once but twice. We have a 10-year to end homeless advisory board. We were able to talk to them and be part of that.
That's not, wait, before we go any further, is this a collection of meaningless poverty pimps who aren't doing shit for the homeless? Because I don't want people to be deceived. Everywhere else I've heard this 10-year plan to end homelessness has nothing to do with the basic issues like where are people going to sleep tomorrow night legally and not be hassled.
Exactly.
Right. It doesn't matter how you look at it one way or another. We are here. We may be across the street from City Hall right now, so we're still showing that we're not going nowhere.
So, but you have backed off from City Hall because they threatened to. They annulled the Constitution for the morning? Is that what they did? Or?
Correct. They came in. They said we were no longer a protest, sanitation, this, that, and another. So we looked at it and told them it was a BS factor that they used things that they asked us to do against us. And so they came in and started telling us, your campsite has to go, even though they knew we were a protest.
Go ahead.
They knew that we were a protest moving forward, and we were really having a voice for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not as an individual, but as a group. Mayor Potter here in Portland, and we could see it, that he got scared of us because we became a very big voice of so much publicity and knowing our rights and knowing how to do the protest policy. He just kept saying that we were a big slumber party all over the newspaper. People were trying to get us out. But, you know, we weren't a slumber party. We were here protesting for human rights, you know. And he didn't realize that we were going to get this big, this fast, and have the support that we've had. He's scared of us. He's scared of the homeless because we're getting a big voice out here.
So I understand the police arrested seven people last weekend in an earlier attempt to frighten you and drive you away?
Yes. I was one of the ones that got arrested.
What were you charged with?
I was interfering with the police officer. Actually, I was sitting in a window sill making sure that the people they were harassing, which was actually our weakest part of our protest, they went after them. They said they were putting their feet out. All the kids were out there putting their feet out in front of our bus system here, and they got scared. TriMet had called their supervisors. Supervisors came out, and then all of a sudden we had a bunch of cops coming over, and they took seven of us away.
What were you arrested for?
They said interfering with a police officer.
And they didn't
get us on the sit lie ordinance. They did not get us on the camping ordinance.
What kind of interference did they claim you were doing?
They said we were interfering with their process to move people in the appropriate place.
By doing what?
Place.
By doing what? By watching from a windowsill?
No, there's a windowsill around City Hall, and you could actually sit in a little ledge there.
Did they claim that was illegal to sit there?
Yeah, it was illegal to sit there, and we were interfering with the police.
Interfering with the police by sitting on the windowsill, eh?
Yep.
That's pretty bad news.
Everybody that was over there could probably move.
So you already have one charge against you. You expect to be arrested again tonight? When are you guys going to sleep again there tonight?
Well, actually, we have a lot of people over in the park. A lot of people are tired because we've had a 21-day just push, push, push. I understand people are tired. I am tired. I took my day off yesterday, and I'm here again back supporting these guys.
Mm-hmm.
When I started this, my start was to empower each and every one of them to have a voice, to be responsible for themselves and their actions.
Right. Now, what?
Not as individuals, but as a group.
So
they have.
Is the park open at night for people to sleep?
Nope, our parks here close at 9 o'clock.
So you're going to be arrested for being in a park after closing at 9 o'clock, right?
Correct. So people are right now, they're having a big meeting to talk amongst each other to find out what to do next.
Now, what about other organizations like, the American Civil Liberties Union or, the National Lawyers Guild or
They've been out. National Lawyers Guild had been out, and the ACLU have been out to talk to us. They've sent out different observers to make sure that people are safe. You know, because I have people here that range from the ages of about 15, 16, which some could be runaways, all the way up to the oldest person I have out here. He's 78 years old. He doesn't have a place to go. He's a veteran. They cut him from his benefits. So where is he supposed to go? Where do I go next?
Street Roots and other homeless newspapers like the former Burnside Cadillac involved at all or not?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
what
10,
do you...
11. 11 Burnside Cadillacs.
Wow.
And we also got, you know, those...
For the purpose of our listeners, tell us what a Burnside Cadillac is.
A Burnside Cadillac is a shopping cart.
Right.
A shopping cart consists of your sleeping bags, your personal papers. It's your house. It is your vehicle to get your house from one place to another in a safe fashion manner.
Yeah, Burnside Cadillac was also the name of a homeless publication in the 90s, named after the... You know, the fact that in Portland, shopping carts are based on the Burnside being one of the major streets as a Burnside Cadillac as a shopping cart. We're talking with Arthur Rios up in Portland, Oregon. What's the organization you're with, Arthur?
The organization that we call ourselves, and we've chosen two names to go under, is we are known as the Homeless Liberation Front and United Poor People.
And... is there a website you guys have where you can be accessed, where you got your stuff written up and such?
Yeah, that would be the Homeless Liberation Front. If you Google it, that's Honks for Support. If you look under homelessliberation.wordpress.com, you can find out our information on the internet, and you can see all the stories that have happened. You guys can leave any messages you like to in support. And if you have input on knowing some kind of programs that would be helpful, something new that Portland doesn't do, you know, that would be grateful. That's information that we can take to Potter.
Now, is there any, I mean, you know, often this happens kind of periodically. I'm not homeless, and I've been housed mostly for the last 20 years, and this kind of protest at City Hall is something that, you know, people get together and do periodically, and it has impact in different times, different places. But have you got with you some veterans of earlier protests who've done this, who've been to City Hall in protests against the former mayor?
Yeah, actually, we have a gentleman that comes out every so often. I let him know that I was going to be on the radio talking today, and he actually wanted to keep his name unknown. But he had did a protest back in 1979.
Wow.
He actually had to go through the Ninth Circuit Court, and he also has been out here through all this time over the last, like, five or six different protests that have happened out in front of City Hall. He just comes out, checks it out, see what's going on, and see how people are doing. And he's got his video camera, and he's been doing his little video log because he's been around so long.
So how have the police been treating the protesters other than these two sweeps? Have they been harassing? Have they been polite? Have they been offering you coffee and donuts? What's happening with it?
Well, actually, there was one night where they offered pizza at about midnight. And what they did was it was just what we call is the homeless photo book. What they do is they take a video camera, they grab stills off that, and make a book. So they know who we are out here.
So
that's all that was.
Ben's got a question for you.
Two whole pizzas and a half pizza in one box at midnight when most people are asleep, and it was the day after that they did that little control buy so they could get everybody's face on video. And it took 7 or 8 of them to come out to do that.
Charming.
Hi, yeah, Arthur. Charming. Arthur, hey, my name's Ben Ramsey. I'm a fellow warrior out here in the streets. I was wondering, what about some of the bedroom communities of the city of Portland? Aren't there any smaller towns around that would probably be more hospitable? What about Salem? How far is Salem from Portland?
Salem is about a good four hours.
Oh, God. So what about other bedroom communities that, you know, around the city of Portland?
Well, we have Gresham and Hillsboro. We do have those places out there where, you know, we could go out, put up small campsites and stuff like that. But
right, right.
Still, they're still also involved in the no camping order or no camping ordinance.
So they still fall under the same ordinance, huh?
Yes, they do.
Wow.
Now, doesn't Oregon have a law that requires a notification before seizing your property? Here in Santa Cruz, Ranger Wallace goes in and sends his teams in to post and destroy property, but that's in violation of what we call in Fresno. The courts have found that violates the federal law. If they're going to take your property, they got to hold it, and they got to be some crime you're responsible for before they can, you know.
What they did to us on City Hall is they brought in and put a no camping ordinance, which was a 24-hour notice. But what they did was made it at like a 72-hour notice, and they said we would come and do the sweep, and we have it to where if you are not next to your property, 5 feet away from your property, they can seize your property. But if you're there and you get a ticket for the camping or the sidewalk ordinance, they will take your property, they will give you a receipt, and then you can pick it up. But you only have 10 days after that notice. So when we got our notice, it was like the 13th to kick everybody out. Today is the 15th. We lasted an extra couple days after. If somebody's items were taken and you went to jail, they'd give you a receipt to go pick it up. But they feel that if it's too much crap, literally, it was going to be thrown away. Or they'll just grab it and take it and throw it away for you.
Well, Becky here has got a question for you.
Arthur?
Yes, Becky.
Oregon is a big state, but not terribly densely populated. It has a lot of recreational places for campers and hikers. Why don't more homeless people camp in legal campgrounds in the Portland area?
If you try to get a permit, is what I was told, to go in and camp in one of the legal campgrounds, you'd have to buy a permit to be in those campgrounds. But there's not too many close to the Portland area to go actually sleep in some of the campgrounds that you're talking about. They're more like... some have little lodges, some have, like, for your RVs or little campers. You know, you could do that. You're going to pay the night's fee and stuff like that. But for homeless to do that, you have to buy a permit.
So you want to put a few other people on while we're talking to you? We're talking with Arthur Rios of the United Poor People, or the Homeless Liberation Front, up in Portland, Oregon. They've been in front of City Hall for, what, 21 days now? Is that right?
Yeah, yes.
Is that 21 days and 21 nights?
Yes.
So
I'm going to turn over the phone over to, his name is Larry Reynolds.
Right, see if you can find a woman, too. We'd like to talk to somebody with another perspective as well.
Okay, here's Mr. Reynolds, and I'll find that woman perspective for you. Hold on 1 second.
Thanks.
Go ahead, start talking.
Hey, Larry.
Hello, sir.
Hey, Larry, it's Robert here. How you doing?
Not so bad.
So, Larry, how long you been in front of City Hall?
I lost track, somewhere like 22 days or something.
And how are accommodations there?
Not so bad. I got some pictures and
now, I mean,
stuff. It's a tough situation.
Is it comfortable? I mean, how does a typical day go for you up there?
Well, typical day. I'm usually up somewhere between 5 and 7, depending on how late I'm up at night. Usually get up and then try to get other people up. Homeless people that are in the same situation I am, they're lacking sleep. They're stressed. They're tired. Angry. They're hungover.
Thank you.
They have mental disabilities. They have physical disabilities, and I got to get these people motivated in some way to show the public that we mean business some way in some fashion or another.
So, Larry, have you been doing this for a while, these kinds of protests? Or when was the last time you were in front of City Hall doing this kind of stuff?
I'm a rookie.
You're a rookie.
Yep.
This is your first protest. Oh, by the way, I want to thank Ben and Becky. They're slipping out of the studio now, so bye-bye. Thank you both. So Larry, have you been picketed before for sleeping in Portland or sitting or any
yep.
other? How frequently has that happened to you?
For me, 3 different occasions.
And how long you been homeless?
At this point in time, 3 years.
And so, how would you say that a homeless person sleeping in Portland, Oregon, has a pretty good chance of being left alone? Because you say if you've only gotten 3 tickets in 3 years, that's not much, right?
Okay, that was done over the last 3 years, but over the last 6 months, it's not a matter of whether I've been ticketed or not. It's a matter of how many times I've been told I can't sit there, lie there, stand there, or sleep there.
And how many times has that been?
Oh, probably about 500.
And so,
me personally.
So, would you say it happens every week? It happens every month.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day for the last, I would say, 7 months.
And is this
eight months?
Is this because there's been some kind of a crackdown, or because the number of homeless people has increased, or is this something that's been going on before that?
This is part of their 10-year plan to end homelessness, is to crack down on the sit and lie ordinance. That's what I'm getting from the mayor's office.
So the 10-year plan to end homelessness is really a 10-year plan to disguise and drive away homeless people.
Exactly.
And so your response, how did you first hear about this protest? How did it come to your attention?
Okay, I was sleeping under the Hawthorne Bridge one night. I'm not even going to try to remember dates. I've got it written down, but I'm not going to refer to my notes.
No, it doesn't matter.
So I'm going to go back, say, 22 days ago, 23 days ago. I was under the Hawthorne Bridge, 11 o'clock at night. It was pouring down rain. It was peaceful. There was like 5 people there, and they came and posted a 24-hour notice, gave us a warning, told us we had to get up a waiver. They would cite us for illegal camping. And the day after that, I heard by word of mouth that this protest, somebody had started a protest here at City Hall, and I was asked to join the protest. So that's where I came on board.
Now, you know, we've done protests like this. I'm not homeless, but I write a lot of stuff about homelessness, and I do this radio show, which is often taken up with homeless topics. We had a protest here in front of our City Hall from March to November.
Right.
It wasn't a mass protest. It was a smaller protest. Santa Cruz is a smaller town, and this was like 12 years ago.
Okay.
You know, so we've had long protests here too. Often this divides the homeless community. Some people say, "Oh, you're just causing the police to crack down on us more."
No.
You know, or they say, "Oh, you know, you're not being reasonable with the city officials. If only you talked nicer to them, the police officers would serve you tea and crumpets," or that sort of thing, you know.
Okay, let me make something perfectly clear about that
situation
that's going on here in Portland right now. From my standpoint, from what I've experienced, from what I'm doing right here, not what I'm doing, but what we're doing, there's approximately right here in the park right now, we just had a meeting. There's probably 50 people, maybe 55. Okay?
Yeah.
Those 55 people, each one of those people, represents at least another 150 to 200 people that are afraid to be documented on a stand of being pushed to this point. They don't have anywhere to go. They don't have any family. They don't have any other friends. These are the family and friends. They represent all those people that are not here for one reason or another. People that are sleeping in their cars. People that are going from couch to couch at their friend's house. People that are homeless. It's a struggle.
So you don't
have
these
people don't have anywhere else to go. These are the people that have made a choice to make a stand right here that this sit and lie ordinance and the no camping ordinance are a direct reflection on why they're here. Because can't sit lie stand or sleep there.
Now, are most of the people, the 55 people in the park you met, people who have been homeless for as long as you? Are they more recent homeless? Are they longer-term homeless?
It's a menagerie. It's a menagerie of people that have been homeless, chronic homelessness, and people that just lost their job yesterday.
Anybody
or their house.
Anybody lost their house?
Yes. Really? I know people who come down and told me there's a veteran that came down and told me the other day he's going to be down here Tuesday. Him and his wife, both.
And so, I mean, I know in Ontario, California, have you heard about Ontario, California?
Yes.
You know, they had an encampment down there that the city actually sponsored. There was, and it was a very large, you know, 6 or 7 square blocks.
Exactly. And that's part of what we put on the table to our city officials, but they're not giving us really any feedback. They're trying to surround it. They're telling us go somewhere else in a more lower profile area.
Uh-huh.
Well, these people are reliant on the services downtown here. And if you go out in a low-lying areas, they pushed all these people out of the city. Now we're invading the people's low-lying areas out there. It's getting more crowded out there, too. So there's less areas that are low-profile out away from the city because they're pushing the people from the inner city out there.
So if the police threaten you with an arrest, you probably have talked about this at your meeting.
I've been to jail already over this situation.
You're one of the 7 who was arrested?
Yes, sir, I was.
And you're charged with what, resisting arrest?
Resisting arrest and interfering with a police officer.
And what exactly did you do that they claimed was interfering with a police officer?
I didn't abide by what he told me to go this way, and I tried to go the other way, and I was shoved into 5 other officers and arrested and told I was resisting arrest.
By go the other way, you mean were you walking on a public street that was
I was
open?
Walking on a public sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
A protest was going on. All I am is a spokesman, part of the protest, and there was an open area. I felt I was being enclosed by 5 officers. When I tried to make a move to an open area to get away from that, I was pushed back into him, handcuffed, and thrown in jail.
Now, do you think that you were targeted because of your activist work, or were you just one of
many?
I
was targeted definitely because when I went into jail, the officer that took us through there, I'll even give the name, a specific, Santos was his name, tried to establish a leadership. Art Rios, the guy that you just talked to, and myself, were asked questions. He asked us, who's the leader here? As we were walking down through the bottom basement to go into jail.
Uh-huh.
We were in cuffs. And Art said, there is no leadership. We're just spokespeople. That's all we are. We represent other people. And he looked at me and he said, well, you must be the sergeant of arms. I said nothing to him. There's no sergeant. So, yes, they were definitely targeting us as being leaders.
So what do you anticipate is going to happen tonight when you go back? Are you going to go back to City Hall, or are you going to stay in the park when the park...
We're doing everything we can to uh-huh. supply. This is the situation here that we've decided as a group. There's going to be certain people that don't want to go to City Hall. Those people are going to go out and try to find places to sleep. The people that want to make a stand, that don't want to hide, that are ready to sit here like me and say, hey, I'm tired of being told to go somewhere else and hide. I want you to see me here. That's who's going to be here. The other people are going to go their own way. Then they're going to come back down to this park, and we're going to regroup, and we're going to continue what we're doing.
So some of you among them, are going to go back to City Hall, exercising
yep.
your right to petition the government and to assemble
yep.
peaceably.
We're going to do everything we can to comply with what they've told us we have to do.
Well, all you have to do is surrender your constitutional rights and disappear, and you'll be all set.
Well, that I am not willing to do.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're not willing to comply with that. Of course, it's easy for me, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 miles away, I don't know how far I am, to make little, you know, brave statements because I'm not up there with you.
Right.
Are any middle class people hanging out with you and being supportive, or is this
yes,
sort of?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. This movement was to make the public aware that the Portland Police Bureau, by direction of City Hall, has pitted the police against the homeless people. Okay? City Hall passed some laws, some ordinances, and they're making the cops enforce them. Understand what I'm getting at?
So are you saying the police are not sympathetic to these ordinances?
Some are.
Yeah.
But there's a certain element within the police force that are prejudiced.
Right.
Racist. They take the they are the aggressor. That's what I'm going to say. The police are the aggressor. It's a peaceful protest.
So Larry,
and when the police show up, uh-huh, that's when it becomes unpeaceful.
So, you know, we're going to be, I'm going to be, you know, he'll be here on Sunday if you guys want to call back on Sunday morning between 9:30 and 1 in the afternoon. Is there anybody else there who'd like to say anything more before we leave? And are there any last words that you want to say? We're talking with Larry Reynolds in Portland, Oregon, in front of Portland City Hall. He's been there for 21 days. He's been to jail once for exercising his right to assembly and to seek somewhere, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere legally to sleep, right?
Right. We feel that it's time to tell people, make people aware, that there's some serious situations as far as how the laws come about and how those laws are enforced. And how those laws come about and how those laws are enforced are a direct reflection with injustices on our civil, human, and constitutional rights. We're here to make a stand against that, and we have people out there in the community that we have made aware that come down here and understand what we're going through.
Is there any connection, Larry, between do people see any connection between what's happening with homeless people in Portland and what's happening with Americans generally under the Bush administration and, let's say, Iraq?
Yes, sir, they do.
And Iraqis under U.S. occupation in Iraq?
Yes, sir, they do, because there's, I don't have the numbers because I don't believe the government numbers, but I'm just going to put a number on it. $1 trillion spent in Iraq already.
Yeah, well, it's $14 billion a month these days, as far as I understand it. Larry, anybody else?
Astronomical, and it's a direct reflection.
Anybody else there want to talk on the show before I roll?
Okay, just one moment. Let me see. We hadn't had anybody set up to do that. Let me see if I can find.
I mean, we're okay. We've done this for about 45 minutes, and we've gotten a good sense of what's cooking
up there. Okay, do you really want it? How bad do you want someone else on? Get somebody else. Katie.
Looking for a woman, actually.
This is Katie. She's a woman.
Hey, well, that sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you, Larry.
You want to talk to Katie? Would you like to talk to a radio station in Fresno, California? Tell them what's going on.
Are they on the phone?
They're on the phone.
What am I the one?
Please talk to them.
Hello?
Hey, Katie. It's Robert in Santa Cruz, California.
Hey, how's it going? Are you on air?
We are both on air, actually.
Awesome.
And we've been talking. We talked to Larry Reynolds, and prior to that, we talked to Arthur Rios. How's the protest treating you as a woman? How's it going for you? Are you being, you know, shoveled off to the side by the male leaders? Are you able to, you know, make your own way? Any particular special problems? Anything you want to say about the for homeless women in Portland that might be of note?
Well, let's see.
Sorry to throw all that at you there.
No, it's fine. I have to say right now, I'm housed. I have my own studio. However, I have been involved probably day two or three with this. I've been here every day, and I spent about 11 days out here on the street with everyone, sleeping. So it's been really taxing, I have to say. Some of the women that I have met along the way and that I've known prior to my involvement in this action or activity, protest, whatever you want to call it, It seems like some of the issues that they're dealing with are safety, probably first and foremost. Not being able to get into shelters because most of the shelters that are out here are for men. I've seen some issues with trans folk. Specific person I know who was female to male.
Transgender
she,
folks?
She/he is transgender, has had a lot of issues with getting into the shelters, domestic violence shelters, and that's been a big issue. As far as, like, the group and cohesiveness and, like, gender politics involvement in the in the actual, like, decision-making, I feel like it's something that we've been trying to be aware of along the way. Awareness isn't always enough, though, is what I'm kind of realizing. And sometimes we have to, fail in a lot of ways in order to really realize how things are going to work better. And so, some of the decisions that have been made, by primarily male individuals, even though there have been female voices involved in trying to influence those. I feel like it hasn't been as important to hear those voices, even though we're really trying to say yes, but make sure to make women's voices just as obviously heard. So, I think now we're kind of coming around to that point where we're kind of speaking more from a consensus perspective, and with one another and hearing everyone, not just a couple people who are making decisions for everyone. So that makes things a little bit more difficult in some ways, but also a lot more fair.
How many women are involved in this protest right now? How many women are there out there in the park?
That's a really good question. I have no idea, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, I have met women who have children out here who are afraid that they're going to get their children taken away because they're homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they're a bad mother or they can't take care of their child, but because they're homeless.
Has that happened to anyone you know?
Good question. I'm sure that there are a lot of women out here. Well, there's one woman I can think of who has 6 children, and she does not have custody of any of them anymore. And a lot of that has to do with her homelessness and probably other circumstances that I'm not sure.
Now, are you in the park right now as you speak on the phone or?
Yes.
And were you previously in front of City Hall, which is what, nearby? Is that my understanding?
Yeah, it's right. It's catacorner to where we are.
And actually, you were told you couldn't be at City Hall because drugs were being sold and somebody poo-pooed and pee-peed and people were blocking the sidewalk. They had pretexts for driving you all away from City Hall?
Well, the final drive away this morning at 5:30 was basically that they were going to clean the sidewalks. And at that point, they reiterated what the rules were about protests. They can't go longer than 8 hours. And within that 8 hours, they do suspend the spit lie ordinance and the camping ban.
Uh-huh.
So that we can protest those certain things if that's what we want to do. However, we can only use a certain part of the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've been sleeping out at City Hall on the sidewalk.
What do you do at night? Do you go home at night, or do you stay out and then sleep out with the protesters?
Well, the first week it was going on, I stayed out here 3 nights, and then I went home for about 4 nights, and then since then, I've been out here pretty regularly every night. And
how many women would you estimate are out there every night? I mean, at the protest.
Oh gosh, I would say probably at least 50-60% of the folks out here are women.
Wow.
Maybe 50%. Maybe 45. I don't know. Somewhere between 45-60% probably.
Are we talking about mostly white people or mostly African-American or Latino or big mix or what's
Well, this is Portland, so we're a very, like, Caucasian city. So
mm-hmm.
I'd say mostly white folks are out here. We do have some folks who are Native American. We also have a couple folks who are African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure plenty of others that I don't even know what they're heritages.
What I'd like you to do, if you can, is have Arthur or have you call in to I'm going to give you a number to call after this. You can leave your own phone number on the machine so I can get back to you to get an update.
Sure.
And the number I've got, have you got a pencil? Do you have any way of writing down the number I give you?
Hold on a second. Let me check and see what I got here.
We're talking with Katie up in Portland, Oregon.
So I heard that they're doing something similar down in San Francisco. Is that the case? Or?
You know, I don't know about San Francisco. I haven't heard. I know in Ontario, California, there was a large encampment that is still going on, but it was actually supported by the city. They provided porta potties and showers.
Oh, wow.
and tents. They provided tents. You know, but then they started driving away people because too many people were there, they said, even though it's a huge space. That's down there in San Bernardino County in Southern California near Los Angeles.
Interesting.
Yeah. You got that? Shall I give you that number now?
Yes, or? I have a pen now.
Okay. The number here is, I'm Robert, and this is 831-423-4833. That's what's called the Huff Line. Again, 831-423-4833. It's with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Just write HUFF. You don't have to remember the whole thing. And what I'd like you to do is have Arthur call, or perhaps if you have a home phone, which you go to, or somebody there does, I want a couple of contact numbers I can reach. And so I can let, you know, get in touch and hear what's happening and do an update on this.
Right, totally. It's been kind of interesting because a lot of the stuff that the police are doing right now are really just scare tactics, it seems.
Uh-huh.
So we don't know what's actually going to happen. I think we're kind of at that point where we're like, when it happens, it happens. You know, we've kind of organized ourselves really well up at this point. We've come from very, 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 very disorganized state to, I would say, very, like, surprisingly, and I'm very, like, proud of the organization that I see going on right here. I mean, we have communications meetings going on pretty regularly. We have where we're going to talk about how we're going to communicate with the media, how we're going to communicate with the public at large, how we're going to communicate with the government. And we're talking about even, like, doing education in the community. And we're keeping each other in check and updated at what's going on. So we're meeting with each other regularly, seeing each other face-to-face, and all taking part in the process towards trying to figure out what we're going to do. And
any vets groups, unions, anarchist groups coming in to be supportive and helpful? Has Obama promised to come visit and give everybody, you know, blessings?
Did he do that? Did he promise to do that?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think much of the Democratic Party people, frankly. So I'm rather sarcastic about them. But I'm just wondering if any people from, you know, other organizations have come down to give support to what you're doing, or whether this is really, you know, kind of your own nitty gritty homeless run movement, which you know, I'm wondering how much community support you're getting.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a great question. We've had everyone from maybe even you would call them conservative faith communities coming out here and bringing food and hanging out, and liberal faith communities coming out and sleeping with us and bringing their communities out here to show their support by helping with making signs, bringing poster board, markers, music, just having a great time dancing. We've had, you know, anarchists come out, Food Not Bombs folks, and some other, like, more radical communities come out and be a part of what's going on. And it's interesting because a lot of the spin in the media has been that it's kind of taken a more radical turn because of some of the activists that are out here. We've even had some folks that have stopped by who are in the community, who have money, who have property, who are interested in talking about these solutions that we have and that we are constantly saying, we have ideas, we have ideas, we have ideas. No one's listening to us. Why isn't anyone listening to us?
On Sunday, if you'd like, Sunday morning, if you want to call back, Katie, to the radio station here, which is 831-469-3119.
I didn't get that. Can you say that again?
Arthur has the numbers. But I give it to you again. 831-469-3119.
Mm-hmm.
Or 831-427-3772.
3772.
Right. If you call, like, between 9:30 and 11 on Sunday morning, I would like to hear more about the ideas as well as how you're doing in terms of what's happened in the last 3 days up there. I should warn you that this is a tiny radio station. Although we do, you know, get a lot of people from different places listening who are interested in these subjects. And frankly, one of the reasons I'm talking to you is because I'd like to see similar actions happening here in Santa Cruz. And I think you in Portland can be a model for the rest of us in terms of, you know, showing that people can get together, and where there seemed to be only isolated, frightened people before, suddenly courage and solidarity seems to start, you know, a rising trend, and it's a rising phenomenon. So.
Sure, and you know what's real interesting is too is that we, even though some of us can't really stand the police force around here, they've been not very kind to a lot of us and continue to harass us constantly. It seems like the police are actually on our side in this one in some ways. They've been sending people out here to City Hall when they've been scooping them out from under the bridges, and so it's been like, it's been pretty cool to like talk to them about like, yeah, this is a problem, and yeah, we know that there needs to be something done, and no, we can't keep ignoring it. But when it comes right down to it, the police have to respond to the mayor, and the mayor is the one who's basically saying, we don't want this anymore, this is an eyesore, this is a dangerous situation, and we gotta, you know, put it away. The unfortunate thing is that, as the mayor's speaking about protecting the general public, he's basically dehumanizing those who are involved in this activity here and who are basically, you know, living in this sanitary, you know, toxicity daily because of the way that we have to live our lives when we're on the streets, and doesn't include them in that community of Portland public.
And you're going to be talking more about this, hopefully, or someone will be talking more on Sunday when you call back, right?
Okay, cool. Well, great. Do you want to talk to Art again, or do you want to talk to Larry? Or?
Well, let me just kind of sum up what's happening here. HomelessLiberationFront.wordpress.com is a good site to go to, I understand, for if you want to get more information.
Sure. You know that we actually changed our name, right?
Which is?
It's changed to United Poor People.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, United Poor People. Hey, buddy.
Well, stay united, and, yeah, if you want to put me back to Arthur, go ahead. But, Katie, again, we've been talking with you. Want me to give me your full name, or you just want Katie?
Katie's fine.
Sounds good to me, Katie.
All right, let me get you back to Arthur, okay?
All right, thank you.
Hold on a second.
Art!
Hello?
Hey.
Okay.
Hey, Art, it's Robert Norris from Santa Cruz with Free Radio. We're talking with Arthur Rios in Portland. And as I just told Katie here, that encourage you to give me a call on that Huff line again where you called me earlier today.
Okay.
And leave me your phone number, and also leave me the number of a couple other people that in case I can't get through to you, I can get through for updates. And then call me back on this number, the one you just called, the one we're talking on now, on Sunday morning. And we can do an update between 9:30 and 11 on
okay.
Sunday morning. How's that sound?
Yeah, I've sent out just want to let people know there in Santa Cruz that, you know, we've tried to send out some messages over to both Obama and Clinton's offices out here.
Yeah.
To see if we could possibly get them to just come by and talk to us. You know,
right.
Just come say hi. You know, we know that they have the possible way of being the next president. But, you know, this is a big issue here that, you know, that has to also have to be recognized because throughout the whole United States, homelessness does happen.
Well, Arthur, invite the Green Party people and the Peace and Freedom Party. You might be more likely to catch the little parties on the left than the big money people who are, you know, who haven't even got the balls to get out of Iraq, much less to do anything about here in the United States. So.
Yep, and we've been also, like, we've had a couple soon-to-be candidate-elects that have been out here. We've had one of the mayor-elects. He was here listening over the meeting they had a little bit ago.
We're going to talk about this more on Sunday morning because I want to hear more about it, but I'm out of time. And
okay.
Also, just, you know, when we talk on Sunday, if you can have a list of things that you want people in who are listening to the radio to do, like a list of email addresses for them to call, contact, or the website. I'm going to tell them already. I'm reminding them that your website is Homeless Liberation Front. Just Google for it in Portland, homelessliberationfront.wordpress.com. New name, United Poor People, right?
Correct. The United Poor People, their website should be going up within the next day or so.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, we've been talking with Arthur Rios. And, well, you know, don't let them grind you down. Stand up, and I'll stop cheerleading from a distance and just take your reports when I talk to you again on Sunday.
And I'd like to say thank you for your support and actually letting us speak about our issues that we have at hand here in Portland, Oregon.
Well, thanks for your courage and leadership, and maybe you'll spark a response here in California.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This town puts up decorations right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations for people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in the doorway, you cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. Maybe this town's gotten colder. Maybe the people have changed. This town's concerned about hunger. If it's an ocean away, people don't mean to be heartless, but they don't know what to do. People don't mean to be homeless, and such a bother to you. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. Got the answer. Maybe they'll all go away. If we just make it illegal to have no place you can stay. If we just make it illegal to be disabled or poor, maybe we finally won't have to think about them anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something. How people don't care anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets.
And that's Carol Denny again, The Cruel Lullaby, ready for Christmas. It's not Christmas, but you get the gist of that. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is called Bathrobe Spears Broadside. I've been listening to folks in Portland. Again, if you want to read more about what's actually happening up there directly from the source, go to Portland Indie Media. Google for Portland Indie Media, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, or you can go directly to their website, as mentioned before, homelessliberationfront.wordpress.com. Yeah, I mean, it's a state away. It's more than 1,000 miles away, but it's a close and hot example of what's needed for people in the situation in cities all over the country, standing up and just saying no to the kinds of abuses, basic human rights abuses, that they're subject to because of their economic status and because they're poor and because they're out there. And the same thing is happening in beautiful liberal Santa Cruz, as I've been pointing out for 20 years, and will continue to point out, probably, until it changes, or until I get so bored or sick of the subject that I go on to something else. You never can tell, I suppose. Hopefully then somebody else will pick up the cry. There's about 20 minutes left in the show. I'm going to now turn... Let me take a quick look at what my little schedule says. Well, the main subject that I talked about on Sunday, a very serious subject of Sergeant Christian Lamas's assault on disabled woman, elderly woman Donna Dice, has actually been provoked a lot of comment. You can read more about that on indiebay.org Santa Cruz. I encourage people to go to the website. Donna herself has posted her own account. The police report has been posted. The matter has been brought up at City Council, and I'll probably be talking about it and playing stuff from City Council on Sunday around that issue. Wasn't able to pick up the tape, didn't have time to pick up the tape from that loyal taper, Valerie Christie. Thank you, Valerie, for your work on this, who's been putting together City Council tapes and recording appropriate parts of them. I'm also going to be talking on Sunday about the latest in the struggle to restore public comment to City Council. Not that City Council would listen to us even if comment was restored, but, you know, it's part of the whole democracy thing, you know, the right of people to be at public meetings without being harassed, arrested, or silenced, without having their input cut back to nothing because the mayor decides that he wants to change the rules around. We'll be talking about that again on Sunday and giving an update of what happened at the City Council meeting on Tuesday, perhaps an update on the bicycle signage situation. I'm still not quite sure what the final outcome of that is. Perhaps we can get Micah Posner or some other bicycle activist on again to talk about that. I'm actually wearing a People Power T-shirt as we speak. The issue there, of course, was safety on Mission Street for bicyclists by better signage. I was suggesting that bicyclists need to get more militant. They certainly have the numbers and demand changes in the lanes and changes in the way the streets are put together. And, of course, again, I often feel like I'm a sort of a radical voice in the wilderness. I felt that way last night when I was at the coalition meeting. There was a meeting which I've announced several times, and I've actually had people on this program talking about it. Let me see here. It was called the Coalition for Peace, Against Peace, Justice, Racism. Let me get the exact name here. Coalition on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice public meeting. And that was up in Felton, and it's the first of four meetings. There are more meetings coming up, which hopefully will be posted up there, and they won't need me to post them. They aren't doing much posting on IndieBay. Maybe they've got their own private network. Actually, there's a story. I think Tony Madrigal was at the meeting, and so with Simba Kenyatta, and so we're about 50 or 60 or 70 people concerned about essentially telling their stories about how they face discrimination either as an African-American person or as a homeless person or as a person with spiky hair, as a gay person. Even the police chief of Scotts Valley stood up and talked about how he faced discrimination as a police officer. That it is, you know, his son would have been called son of a cop, you know, you son of a cop. And, you know, there was a lot of, the basic theme was it's hurtful to be attacked for the group you're in that you either have no control over or that you shouldn't be attacked for because it's simply a group that is unpopular with some folks or is considered weird or strange or nonconformist or isn't the majority group. And that being attacked, particularly as a young person for doing this, can be very hurtful. And also, if you're, you know, the basic things like trying to get housing and showing up, you're African American, finding suddenly that You can't get employed. You can't get a house. And then we're talking in Santa Cruz. We're not talking about Indiana or Mississippi. Specific experiences from Simba Kenyatta and Wanda Knight and other individuals who didn't want to be named but who had the courage to stand up and talk about these issues. It was moving to hear. I was a little concerned that I didn't know quite where it was leading, because while I'm into the, you know, everybody stand around the campfire holding hands and singing kumbaya sort of thing, and that's a little sarcastic, but the idea of only if we chat about this issue enough and, you know, bring everybody into the dialogue, things are going to change if we just sort of are friendly with each other. That's Pat Clark was running the meeting. He's an African-American guy who's on the board of directors of the Vets Hall, who's apparently repeatedly upheld the decisions of Tim Bratton, who I've heard many a homeless vet criticize and a number of other people criticize harshly. He doesn't seem too accountable to at least some of the vets in this community. And Clark doesn't seem too approachable in that regard either. Oh, he's a nice guy. I like Pat, you know, as an individual. That's a problem, you know. You live in a community and you like people as individuals. I've got nothing against Mike Rotkin. I don't, you know, he's okay. You know, I chat with Kim Fitzmaurice on the streets. I wouldn't call ourselves big buddies, but, you know, I mean, but these are the people that will have you arrested at city council or call the police if you come to an ACLU meeting with a sign, even though they know it's unconstitutional to do it, or they should. And it's because they're in positions of power, and they somehow feel that their judgment is more important and more valid and more important, more likely to be listened to by the police than yours. Anyway, my concern about the coalition meeting was I didn't know where it was going. I think, you know, on Friday, as I say, Donna Dice had her arm broken by Sergeant Lamas. Essentially, it looks like, for not obeying orders, being submissive enough to Lamas, who apparently arrived with unclear directions and unclear identification by her account, to harass people who were in their vehicles and doing probably nothing more than, if they were doing this, though there was no indication they were doing this by any of the witnesses, at some time there have been complaints of marijuana being smoked. Well, it's legal to smoke medical marijuana if you're 1,000 feet away from a school. Or 1,000 feet away. I think it's a school and there's a couple of other things you have to be 1,000 feet away from. But that seemed to me to be one of those places, and up where they were up near Lighthouse Field. So to have the police set a priority, which essentially is going after poor people in vehicles and trying to drive them away, and this has been the city's priority through Parks and Rec, through Emily Riley's anti-homeless signage in Harvey West Park, through permit parking zones, through Coonerty's 15-minute parking lot panic law, all these laws designed, and the sleeping ban, of course, designed to make this an unwelcome city and to give the police tools, as they like to call them, for selecting and punishing people that they choose to punish. That can often fall on people who simply assert their rights, as Donna Dice did. Said, I don't want to talk to you. I'm going somewhere else. And to have your arm broken for doing this, and then to have the police cook up a story about it and issue it as a press release, is, to me, an ominous and dangerous thing. And I've left messages with Sergeant Lamas. Well, I've left a message with Sergeant Lamas, inviting him to tell his side of the story, inviting him to correct any misimpressions or misstatements. I really should invite him, and I did invite him at city council. Actually, I invited the police chief, Scary, Howard Scary, his name is, to resign. You might have called that a disruptive shout at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday. It wasn't really disruptive. It was a free speech exercise and didn't stop the meeting. It's just a comment. As he came up to give some kind of award, I shouted, resign. Because that was my public comment on his award. They didn't allow us, Mayor Coonerty does not allow comments, even though he should, and he's required to under the Brown Act. When he engages in public presentations, the public has the right to make comment on each item on the agenda. He denies us that right. So you have to exercise it sometimes from the audience, which I did. And so we have a bad situation, and I don't know if, you know, meetings that simply involve... I have nothing wrong with telling stories about abuses. That's important. But I think it's wrong to have the illusion that simply doing this without having concrete demands for changes is going to have any effect. And it's also wrong, I think, to think you have to reinvent everything from zero to come up with what's needed to deal with the police department. You need a special prosecutor. You need to fire the administrative heads. You need to have significant community control. You need to make some profound and basic changes that aren't popular in some in many quarters, and many regard as politically not possible. But it's better to vote for something you want and not get it than vote for someone you don't want and get her or him, as Eugene Debs historically said. I'm going to play a little bit now because I've been holding this tape back for too long. It's a little hard to hear in the beginning, but it's relevant to this whole police issue. And that's another issue about this coalition, that there's a political element to it. Simba Kenyatta announced he was running for city council, which is fine. He probably was one of the few he was probably the best candidate in the last election. Of a very bad group of candidates, but he wasn't a very good candidate because he doesn't. Well, he's not willing to advocate strongly on obvious issues about rights of poor people, for example. At least he didn't in the last election, and he promised he was going to do all kinds of organizing work right after the election. And a year went by, and as far as I could see, nothing happened. But now something is happening, so let me commend him for that. Madrigal has similar problems, and I'm afraid, you know, he may be running for re-election too, and some of this may have to do with that political dimension. So that has to be remembered. But doesn't mean you shouldn't support groups that are exposing and talking about and giving support to victims of police misconduct. One of those people was Paul Ortiz, who's a professor up at UCSC who didn't get tenure, probably because of some of his unpopular positions with the administration. At the anti-war rally, which went to drive recruiters off campus or encourage students not to sign up for the murder machine in Iraq, I talked to Paul Ortiz, and I got the first part of this tape is hard to hear, but bear with it, and you'll hear Paul talking about some issues that I think are important in the last 10 minutes of this show.
Racial discrimination profiling.
Yes.
Casual comment around the triple fine zones in Halloween about a year ago.
Yeah.
Any comments on how that situation has improved? I'm not just talking about racial profiling, but the city council's, in my mind, subservient to the police department's line that everything is fine.
Well, I was shocked, and my wife Jill was shocked too, to see armed police officers coming to a city council meeting suggesting that Tony should resign.
I just want to clarify what he said in case you can't hear that. I asked him, what do you think about the Santa Cruz City Council's response to Madrigal's suggestion that he oppose the triple fine zones in Halloween because of possible police profiling the year before? And Paul Ortiz responded he was shocked to see police in uniform come into city council and demand that Tony Madrigal resign.
That shocked me. I was out of the state when this was happening. The other thing that shocked the author was the claim made by some of the council people that there's no racial profile in this community.
And he says here that, you know, he was out of the state when it had happened, but he was shocked to hear that city council claimed that there was no racial profiling in this community. And that, of course, is one of the key issues that this coalition that met last night is concerned about. And properly so.
Which was absurd. There's racial and class profiling. And many of my students of Middle Eastern descent, report that they can't even go downtown without being profiled. It's just absurd. I think too many people in this community are living kind of in a bubble. They think that Santa Cruz is this wonderful progressive paradise.
And again, he's saying too many people in this community are living in a bubble. They think it's a progressive paradise. His students of Middle Eastern descent have complained about racial profiling. The perils of trying to record in the middle of a loud crowd with a $25 handheld tape recorder. But I think it gets better.
Stop us from dealing with the issues if we deny their problems. And Tony simply was trying, as you say, it was kind of a very almost it wasn't even very assertive. Tony just said, hey, I saw this happen to people. I saw them being profiled.
Well, you have to ask, is it, I'm concerned about the possibility of racial profiling is what he said.
Yeah.
And so he didn't even, Tony, I've never been a big fan of his on the police review board or on the council because he doesn't come out directly and address these issues. But the fact that he mentioned it at all led to such a huge cavalcade of criticism that I think, I guess that's what attracted your attention.
Yeah, exactly. I was shocked to hear Emily Rowley claim that there was, that she had never witnessed, well, I wasn't too shocked to know that she had never witnessed it personally. However, Mark Kaufman, as again many of our new listeners know, did an incredible program on community television where he showed Emily Rowley in a prior campaign openly acknowledging that one of her employees at Emily's Bakery had been racially profiled repeatedly by the police. And then she comes around a few years later and says it doesn't exist. I mean, that's just, to me, ludicrous. And it really, like, totally undermined my confidence in her and a lot of members of the city council who, when we tried to give testimony about racial profile, what we'd actually seen or witnessed, they didn't want to, I mean, they kind of looked at us. It seemed as if they were going to fall asleep. It was really just sad.
And what Paul is talking about is how Emily Rowley made one statement before she was elected to city council about discrimination she'd seen, and then afterwards suddenly there was no such thing. And that when Paul Ortiz and other speakers came to city council to express their outrage and concern that the police department and the entire city council are promulgating the myth that there's no profiling in Santa Cruz, that the council just sort of stared at them blankly.
And that was a year ago now. What has happened since then, if anything? What needs to be done to change the situation?
Well, one of the things that needs to be done is there needs to be citizen oversight of the police. Now, I wasn't here when the prior board existed, and I've heard there were a lot of critiques of that citizens review board.
It was weak, and it didn't use the powers it had, but Kaufman, when he took the chair, he was the final chair, final year of the board, did try to get into issues of racial profile.
And what we're talking about here is I ask Paul, what does he suggest be done? This whole thing happened a year ago, all this discussion of with Madrigal, or half a year ago, perhaps now. And he said, well, community oversight of the police, citizen control of the police. And we talked about the last police review board, which was killed by the council in 2003 in January. And I pointed out that they didn't use the powers that they had, but that the last chair of the police review board, Mark Halfmoon, was with other members of the board. Tony was on the board. I don't think he was terribly active, but I also think that he kind of went along with the leadership of Mark Kaufman. They tried to investigate the use of force called display of force policies that the police had, their racial profiling, selective enforcement. And in my view, as a consequence of this, or certainly it's quite a coincidence that the minute they begin investigating this, suddenly the board gets dissolved.
Selective enforcement, use of display of force policies, and I think that was one of the reasons, although I wasn't on the inside track, that the board was dismantled. Well, they claimed it was for budget reasons.
And yeah, I can understand this tape because I can listen to the original tape as it goes, but I understand it's getting pretty distorted out there. So again, my apologies for not having a better tape and a better tape recorder or recording this in a better location. Usually it's my tapes can be heard generally, so I will try to be a little more selective. I will be back on Sunday in the morning. Hopefully we'll get another update from Portland. I've tried to contact Ontario, Canada, David Bush, who I've had on the air, who was doing a march to the San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors on behalf of the people being evicted from the tent city down there. It sounds like people in Portland are much more militant than the people in Ontario, California. Perhaps that's because they have to take and demand, and they aren't being given anything. They're out there in front of City Hall tonight, in front of Portland, Oregon, and good luck to them. No new updates on the sleeping ban lawsuit. That is currently awaiting the return of attorneys, one of whom is visiting a sick relative, the other of whom is out of the country. But we are actually waiting for information from the police department, which they've denied us, which is pretty straightforward information requesting the citations of the people who have been cited for sleeping specifically, and they're refusing to give them. And now we're going to have to make a formal request in a different manner And once we get those citations, I've been informed by Attorney Kay Wells, we have enough to go and file the complaint in federal court, which will then, and this will take a little longer, be followed by a request for an injunction against the city and the enforcement of all laws around camping, sleeping, et cetera, given the fact that there is a massive shelter shortage and the police have no place, no legal place to send people to go to sleep when they rouse them in their camps or rouse them from sleeping in bushes in ways that they have no right to do because it violates the Eighth Amendment. There are other reports coming in from Fresno. There's going to be a report. Fresno is another active city, which has been successful in the Kincaid decision in stopping the seizure of homeless property, stopping an anti-camping law. I'm going to be looking into what's going on in Berkeley, the one city that Mayor Coonerty cites as his precedent for claiming that he can contract all public discussion to a two-minute period on sometimes as many as 30 items on the consent agenda. And he can put items on the consent agenda as he wishes so that he can choose which items won't get any real public comment unless members of the city council want that to be the case in violation of state law. And I've written a letter about that, which I'll be reading on Sunday, about his behavior at the last few council meetings, which is no news and no surprise to those of you who've been listening to this show regularly. But that's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, of course, is the internationally known beer drinking show From the Cream to the Dregs, where you not only get to ponder Uncle Dennis's Brew of the Week, but you also get to hear the music that he chooses to play. So you get a little of the brew, and you can stew as you brew. In fact, I hear his knock on the door now. So let's go out on a little Carol Denny. Here's a song called Captured.
Still be sitting where I am now, talking about some.
Santana. I'm sure you all recognize that one. That's off the Abraxas album. Came out in 1970. I'm Uncle Dennis, and you're listening to From the Cream to the Dregs from 8 to 11 tonight. We'll be playing the music of the 60s and the 70s. Of course, at 9 o'clock, we'll take a little break for the Earth First Update. But thought we'd start out with that little ditty there. And then we're going to turn to another little ditty in just a second. As long as I remind you that you're at Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, or you could be at www.freakradio.org, listening on the Wide Weird Web. Either way, you're in for some fine music tonight. As I said, we just got done listening to Black Magic Woman by Santana, and now we're going to hear the guy who wrote the song off an album called Fleetwood Mac, The Vintage Years Live. Yeah, Peter Green wrote Black Magic Woman, and here's his version from that same year, 1970.
Okay, before we get started, I'd just like to say that we are making a live recording here tonight and should be A-OK. So right now, Boston Tea Party is proud to present to you the one and only incredible Fleetwood Mac. Come on, head for him.
I've got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. She's got me so blind I can't see that she's a black magic woman, and she's trying to make the devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with the tricks. Turn your back on me, baby, 'cause you might just break up my magic stick.